Terence Hayes loves to play with rhythm and form in his poetry, and he's always challenging himself to try something new with the content, especially in his sixth book of 70 American sonnets.
It's what you write to your beloved, but it's for my past and future assassin. Hence the shout outs to places where black men have been killed. But the point that I'm trying to make is like, it is also ultimately a gesture towards empathy.
Take a peek into the creative process that led to Terence Hayes' American Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin, longlisted for the 2018 National Book Awards, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. One of the joys of working with a radio show that has over 40 years of archives is that you can sometimes get to follow a writer's career. I've been lucky enough to interview Terence Hayes 3 times, and you can hear him on our website, newletters.org, talking about his beginnings as an art student on a basketball scholarship in South Carolina, where he painted and secretly wrote poetry, and then later when he was a professor in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where he started his family. A favorite conversation was for Valentine's Day 2011, when I spoke with him and his wife, the poet Yona Harvey, about their creative lives. Hayes, a 2014 MacArthur Fellow, served as the 2017-18 poetry editor for the New York Times Magazine, while the distinguished writer-in-residence at New York University. Since the publication of his first book in 1999, he's continued to receive critical acclaim and major awards. But as a poet, he's always looking forward, as you'll hear in this November 2016 recording of the Hall Center for the Humanities Lecture Series at the University of Kansas. At that time, he had recently won the NAACP Image Award for Poetry for his book, How to Be Drawn, which was also a finalist for both the National Book Award and the National Book Critics Circle Award. So, of course, that's what everyone was expecting him to focus on. However, Terence Hayes, who pulls from Shakespeare to the late rapper ODB, wanted to try something on this audience in Lawrence, Kansas. So get ready for some PG language ahead.
Okay, we'll see if I'm going to read crazy weird poems or like straightforward poems. So I guess I'll do some mix of it. But you know, the most exciting thing that happened to me today is that in my hotel, I looked out my window and I saw a bookstore. So I was like, wow. An independent bookstore. And then I looked, and right around the corner, there was another bookstore. That's crazy. That used to be normal, but it's not anymore. So I was like, okay, good. I wasn't sure about Kansas, but you got bookstores, so you're doing something right. I just actually have How to Be Drawn up here. And what I will tell you is I really only care about like the last thing I wrote. By the time the book is out there, I'm mostly just thinking about a few new things that I need to try out. So that means they could be terrible, but I am always trying to work towards those. So that does kind of inform what I read. But I was thinking about a few things that I should read just to kind of see what transition I can make to what I'm doing now, which is always a little bit different than what is in the books or what you might expect if you've read the books. I was also deciding, should I be funny tonight? I just haven't been feeling funny for like the last 10 days or so. You know, so I was like, do I have any humorous poems? I do, usually. This is the first poem. And then there's some weird stuff in the basement, like King Lear stuff that I would never say. But I'm doing that because I'm working my way towards some sonnet. So there's a little Shakespeare for you. But there's also some ODB. I don't know if the same people who know ODB are going to know that I was alluding to King Lear. The first poem, what it looked like. Dear old dirty bastard, I too like it raw. I don't especially care for Duke Ellington at a birthday party. I care less and less about the shapes of shapes because forms change and nothing is more durable than feeling. My uncle used the money I gave him to buy a few vials of what looked like candy after the party where my grandma sang in an outfit that was obviously made for a West African king. My motto is never mistake what it is for what it looks like. My generosity, for example, is mostly a form of vanity. A bandana is a useful handkerchief, but a handkerchief is a useless ass bandana. This only looks like a footnote in my report concerning the party. Trill stands for what is truly real, though it may be hidden by the houses just over the hills between us, by the hands on the bars between us. That picture of my grandmother with my uncle when he was a baby is not Trill. What it is the feeling felt seeing garbage men drift along the pre-dawn avenues. A sloppy, slow rain taking its time to the coast. Milk toast is not Trill, nor is bouillabaisse. Bakushan is Japanese for a woman who is beautiful only when viewed from behind. Like I was saying, my motto is never mistake what it looks like for what it is, else you end up like that Negro Othello. Was Othello a Negro? Don't you lie about who you are sometimes and then realize the lie is true? You are blind to your power, brother bastard, like the king who wanders his kingdom searching for the king. And that's okay. No one will tell you you are the king. No one really wants a king anyway. So that's sort of in the middle of what I could do. Like, there's some weird stuff in there. But then, you know, there's a grandmother for people who like poems should have grandmothers in them. Y'all get the King Lear. If you've got a college degree, especially in English, you should know. Okay. So that's the first one. A lot of the poems have a shadow of like experience in them, just allowing for that world to kind of be as open as it can be, even if it's sometimes the shadow of a real world or the thread of history, you know, is there. And that sort of was with the first poem. Like, I might not say that the horse reference or the king, no one wants a king, you know, is King Lear, or maybe you don't know Wu-Tang Clan and Baby I Like It Raw. You might not know any of that, but it's the pieces of things. It's like a quilt. You don't have to know where all the parts of the quilt are from to make a quilt. So that's usually how I think about the world. That's how I think about everything I encounter. So I can take it like a little something and then it'll become a poem. But this one, so this didn't actually happen to me. This actually happened to my wife, where a dude, Bud, was known around Pittsburgh for having like Confederate stuff all over his car. He ain't even from the South. So one day he did show up at the house and tried to work on something and didn't work on it or something. And then later when I came home, my wife was like, you know, Bud was here with all that Confederate stuff. And I was like, you know what? I need to write a poem about him. So in the poem, it's me dealing with him because, you know, I don't know if I could have dealt with him in the real world. So I made a poem. Black Confederate ghost story. Attention, African-American apparitions, hung, burned, or drowned before anyone alive was born. Please make a mortifying midnight appearance before the handyman standing on my porch this morning with a beard as wild as Walt Whitman's. Except he is the anti-Whitman, this white man with Confederate pins littering his denim cap and jacket. And by mortified, dear ghost, I mean scare the snot out of him. I wish I were as tolerant as Walt Whitman waltzing across the battlefield like a song covering a cry of distress, but I want to be a storm covering a Confederate parade. The handyman's insistence that there were brigades of black Confederates is as oxymoronic as terms like civil war, free slave. It is the opposite of history. Goodbye plantations doused in Sherman's fire and homely, lonesome women weeping over blue and gray bodies. Goodbye, colored ghosts. You could have headed north, that there was a south to flee. In Louisiana, north begins with Mississippi. As far as I know, east is Alabama, west is Texas. And here is this fool telling me there were blacks who fought to preserve slavery. Goodbye, slavery. Hello, black accomplices and accomplished blacks. Hello, Robert E. Lee bobblehead doll on the handyman's dashboard, whistling Dixie across our post-racial country. Last night, I watched several hours of television and saw no blacks. NASDAQ, NASCAR, NADA Black. I wish there were more ghost stories about lynched Negroes haunting the mobs that lynched them. Do I believe no one among us was alive between 1861 and 1865? I do and I don't. We all have to go somewhere and we are probably already there. I know only one ghost story featuring a brother in Carrollton, Alabama, dragged to the center of town in a storm for some crime he didn't commit. As he was hung, lightning struck a window on the courthouse he's been haunting ever since. Attention apparitions, this is a solicitation very much like a prayer. Your presence is requested tonight when this man is polishing his Civil War relics and singing good old rebel soldier to himself. Hello, sliding chairs. Hello, vicious whispering shadows. I'm a reasonable man, but I want to be as inexplicable as something hanging a dozen feet in the air.
Terence Hayes, reading from his fifth poetry collection, How to Be Drawn, at the University of Kansas. You're listening to New Letters on the Air.
This is the deer. Usually when I read it, I talk about like the muscadine. I don't know if muscadines grow in Kansas, but they do in the South. And they're little berries, and my favorite thing to say, it's gonna be true any day now, is that if they sold them at Whole Foods, you would buy them. But actually, where I grew up, they would just be like little weeds on the side of the road. So that's what they are, these little berries. The person in this poem who did tell me this story, and I said to him what I'm saying, like, man, she was trying to save you. And so that was it. I wrote the poem, and the last time I saw him, he was like, man, I went home, and I saw my mom, and I read that poem to her. And she was like, oh, baby, I didn't know that you were upset. I didn't know that you even remembered that, you know. So I was like, okay, well, if nobody else reads the poem, I've done it. But then a little while later, after he had a few drinks, he was like, don't write no more damn poems about me. I was like, all right, okay. I'll let you know if I'm gonna put you in a poem again. I didn't put his name in it, so I think he was torn. And Pataskala is just the name of a town in Ohio, and I don't actually know how close I was to Pataskala when I saw this little deer get hit one time, but I knew I was gonna put Pataskala in a poem because it's Pataskala, so. The deer. Outside Pataskala, I saw the deer with the soft white belly, the deer with two eyes as blind as holes. I saw it leap from a bush beside the highway, as if a moment before it leapt, it had been a bush beside the highway. And I saw how if I wished it, I could be the deer, a creature bony as a branch in spring. And when I closed my eyes, I found the scent of muscadine, the berry my mother plucked Sundays from the roadside where fumes toughened its speckled skin and seeds slept suspended in a mucus thick as the sleep of an embryo. It is the ugliest berry along the road, but chewed, it reminded me of speed. And I saw when I was the deer that I didn't have to be a deer. I could become a machine with a woman inside it, moving at a speed that leaves a stain on the breeze and on the muscadine's flesh, which is almost meat, the sweet pulp a muscadine leaves when it's crushed in the teeth of a deer or a mother, for that matter, or her child, waiting with something like shame to be fed a berry uglier than shame. Though it is not like this for the deer, it is not shame because the deer is not human. It is only almost human when it looks on the road and leaps, covering at least 30 feet in a blink, the deer I cannot be, the dumb deer, dumb and foolish enough to ignore anything that runs but is not alive, a trafficking machine filled with a distracted mind and body, deadly and durable enough to deconstruct a deer when it leaps, I'm telling you, like someone being chased. I remember a friend told me how, when he was 8 or 9, a half-naked woman ran to the car window crying a man was after her with a knife. But his mother locked the doors and sped away. Someone tell him his mother was not a coward. That's what he thinks. Tell him it was because he and his little brother were in the car that she would not let the troubled world inside. It was no one's fault. The mind separated from the body. I could almost see the holes of her eyes, the white fuzz on her tongue, the raised bud soft as a bed of pink seeds, the hole of a mouth stretched wide enough to hold a whole baby inside. I could almost see its eyes at the back of her throat. I could definitely hear its cries. Don't ask me what that one means. Maybe two more from the book and then I'll try out some of this new stuff. I do like a long sentence. If I just think about like daily practice, when it just comes down to like, I gotta write something every day just to stay in shape. One of my kind of default things, in addition to the sonnet, which we'll talk about, is just like to see how long a sentence can go. And sometimes it works. That Dear poem, you can kind of hear it structurally. It was pushing to be one long sentence. And then when I stopped, I really did think about the story. And I just thought, okay, well, I'll break the rule and I'll make a new kind of section to the poem. But this one, How to Draw an Invisible Man, and there's a few in the book. Actually, there's always one or two in every book because I try it so much. This one is Ralph Ellison, if you know The Invisible Man. And in it, you know, there's some stuff about the novel and also some stuff about him and his personality. But essentially, I was just trying to ride this sentence. How much could I ride this sentence before I came to a stop sign? How to Draw an Invisible Man. And then, when Ralph Ellison's corpse burst open, I discovered his body had been hoarding all these years a luscious slush, a sludge of arterial words, the raw and unsaid pages with their plots and propositions, with their arcs of intention and babbling, with their mumbling streams and false starts and their love and misanthropic thrust, tendons of syntax unraveled from his bones and intestinal cavities, the froth of singing, stinging, stinking ink, reams of script fraught with the demons, demagogues and demigods of democracy, demographies of vague landscapes, passages describing muddy river bottoms and elaborate protagonists crawling through a foliage greener than money in America before America thought to release anyone from its dream, the waterlogged monologues, one who is unseen speaks, burst suddenly from Ralph Ellison's body. And because I mean to live transparently, I am here, bear with me, describing the contents, the fictions envisioned by Emerson and immigrants, the dogmas, aboriginal progeny, scholastic recriminations, dementia, jubilee, hubris in Ralph Ellison, Duke Ellington's shadow, a paragraph on the feathered headdress of Marcus Garvey. Some of it was pornography. Some of it alluded to Negroes who believe educating black kids means teaching them to help white people feel comfortable. Some of it outlined the perks of invisibility, how we are obliged to eschew the zoo, the farm animals. It had something to do with captivity, flayed in the clinical light. The notes printed on the underside of his flesh were reversed, but readable, mirrored in the metal of the medical table. And I wanted to print it all properly in a posthumous book in the name of prosperity and proof the genius we believed he'd wasted had been waiting all these years for a simple death sentence to break free. This is gonna try to set us up, and then I'll just decide like how much of this we can carry with the stuff that's not in the book yet. So this poet, Wanda Coleman, died a couple of years ago, and she was a spectacle is what I like to say about her. She was big and she wore like these gazelle glasses and her hair, it wasn't actually like dreadlocks, it was more like Lisa Simpson. It would just be like coming out almost like a star shape, and she had an affinity for like leopard skins and stripes and polka dots, but she was a hell of a poet. So one of the things she did though that I feel like I'm the only person that thought was wondrous was that she would write these poems called American Sonnets. And if you look her up, they show up in her books. And so I thought, while she was alive actually, and you know, we were friends, although you had to kind of pass a couple of tests to be friends with her. So we were friends. I sent her this one. So it's just called American Sonnet for Wanda C. So it doesn't scan, if that means anything to you. I think you can graduate without knowing how to scan a poem. But it is playing around with like rhyme. So that's really what I'm messing around with, although in the more recent stuff, I dispensed with that. But anyway, so let me read this one. As I said, I gave it to her before she passed, although it does sound kind of like an elegy at this point. American Sonnet for Wanda C. Who knows, I know, why all those lush-boned, worn-out girls are whooping at where the moon should be. An eyelid clamped on its lightness. Nobody sees her without the hoops firing in her ears because nobody sees. Tattooed across her chest, she claims, is bring me to where my blood runs. And I want that to be here, where I am her son, pent in blackness and turning the night's calm loose and letting the same blood fire through me. In her balm hair, shells full of thunder. In her mouth, the fingers of some calamity, somebody foolish enough to love her foolishly. Those who could hear no music weren't listening. And when I say it, it's like claiming she's an elegy. It rhymes because of her with effigy. Because of her, if there is no smoke, there is no party. I think of you, Miss Calamity, every Sunday. I think of you on Monday. I think of you hurling hurt where the moon should be and stomping into our darkness calmly.
American Sonnet for Wanda C. from the 2015 collection, How to Be Drawn. Stay with New Letters on the Air for some daring new work ahead, but be forewarned, the next 2.5 minutes contains the N-word twice in the first poem. Again, here's Terrence Hayes.
What I love is just like the idea of an American sonnet versus a Shakespearean sonnet, if you know what I'm talking about, or a Petrarchan sonnet, or even a Miltonic sonnet. Milton has a kind of sonnet form too. If you know what the sonnet is, it's a love form. It comes from the troubadours. It's what you write to your beloved. So I was like, okay, cool. What does American sonnet look like? Anyway, I started thinking about it again lately, and because my poems have gotten really long, I didn't want to bring you too many long poems, but I have a poem that's like 1,200 words long. I was like, okay, that's too much. I need to stop. So I thought, oh, I'll just write sonnets. So far, I got like 6 of them. American sonnets from my past and future assassin. Here's the first two. Probably twilight makes blackness dangerous darkness. Probably all my encounters are existential jambalaya, which is to say, a nigga can survive. Something happened in Sanford. Something happened in Ferguson and Brooklyn and Charleston. Something happened in Chicago and Cleveland and Baltimore and most everywhere in this country. Probably someone is prey in all of our encounters. Probably blindness has a chewed heart in its belly. Probably twilight makes blackness darkness and a gate. Probably the dark blue skin of a black man matches the dark blue skin of his son the way one twilight matches another. Probably all of our encounters are existential jambalaya, which is to say, can a nigga survive? Would you rather have happiness or freedom? Pain or boredom? Would you rather hitch your rotten rope to a wagon or hitch your rotten wagon to a leash? After blackness was invented, people began seeing ghosts. When my father told me I was among God's chosen ones, he was only half bullshitting. Probably each twilight is as different as a father is from his son. Something happens everywhere in this country, every day. Someone is praying, someone is prey. Probably blindness has a chewed heart in its belly, or a gate opening upon another gate. So that's two. I'm just kind of going through them. They don't have like numbers or anything. Probably ghosts are allergic to us. Our uproarious breathing and ruckus, our eruptions, our disregard for dust. Small worlds unwirl in the corner of our house after death. Our warriors, weirdos, anti-heroes, our sirs, sires, our sires, sidewinders and winos, whiners and wonders become dust. I know a few of the dead. I remember my sister's last hurrah. I remember the horror of her head on a pillow. For a long time, the numbers were balanced, the number alive equal to the number in graves. After a long time, the bones become dust again, and the dust, after a very long time, becomes dirt, and the dirt becomes soil, and the soil becomes grain again. This bitter earth is a song clogging the mouth before it's swallowed or spat out. They don't seem to want it, but they wanted it. They don't seem to want it, but they won't admit it. They don't seem to want admittance. They don't seem to haunt admission. They don't seem to want it, but they haunted it. They don't seem to haunt it, but they haunt it. They don't seem to get it, but they got it. They don't seem to buy it, but they sell it. They don't seem to want it, but they wanted it. They don't seem to pray, but they predators, my past and future assassins. They don't seem to pray, but they full of prayers and ghosts. They don't seem to want it, but they wanted it. They don't seem too haunted, but they haunted. Probably blindness has a chewed heart in its belly. My sister became a ghost to happiness, freedom, pain, boredom. And the ghost destroyed my beloved. When I came to, men were dragging her upstairs. They wore reddened gloves. She was asleep, but her eyes were open and encrusted with starlight residue and oozing dust. It looked like any minute she might burst into cloud. She might slip through their rubber fingers like glitter. If they rubbed her vigorously enough, I thought she might ignite. They were not knights. They were not doctors or poets. They were not savages or shadows. The words I would use to describe the men would require 5 or 6 months of revision to get right. No one loves a song that's only 10 seconds long, or 10 seconds old, or made of one note. No one loves a one-word poem or blindness. Pure old heart, poor old heart, I've grown tired of talking to you. This bitter earth is an existential jambalaya clogging the mouth. I remember my sister's last hurrah. Probably someone is prey in all of our encounters. Probably twilight makes blackness dangerous, sadness, old heart. Dear poison. She was asleep, but her eyes were open. It was a kind of blindness. She joined the black people I've grown tired of losing. They were going upstairs together, all the dead from parts of Florida, Ferguson, Brooklyn, Charleston, Cleveland, Chicago, Baltimore, everywhere. Would you rather hitch your rotten whiteness to a wagon or hitch your rotten wagon to blackness, my sweet past and future assassin? My sweetness, sweetness, sweetness.
Thank you.
Terrence Hayes, in November 2016, reading early poetry from what would become his sixth book, American Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin, published in 2018 by Penguin and longlisted for the National Book Awards. He has another publication from this year called To Float in the Space Between, a life and work in conversation with the life and work of Etheridge Knight from Wave Books. If you'd like to hear more of this poet, listen to earlier interviews with Terrence Hayes from 2004 to 2013 on our website, newletters.org. His poetry has also appeared in our magazine, New Letters. If you're interested in possible publication, here's an opportunity from our editor, Robert Stewart.
You can earn $750 for a single short story chosen through our New Letters Publication Awards series. Let us see your best short fiction by Sunday, October the 28th, and we also will send you a subscription to the award-winning magazine, New Letters. Go to the Writers Wanted tab on our website, newletters.org.
You can also keep up with the magazine, radio show, and Bookmark Press on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter. And if you can't always hear us on your favorite public radio station, listen to the shows wherever you find your podcasts. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters Magazine, published by the University of Missouri, Kansas City, with partial financial support from the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. A special thanks to Kay McIntyre of Kansas Public Radio for providing the recording of Terrence Hayes at KU's Hall Center for the Humanities Lecture Series. It was produced with help from Blake Elizondo and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam. Thanks for listening to New Letters on the Air.